CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. Live Tuesday. Well, it would be awful if it was dead Tuesday. Yeah, I know. No, no, I wasn't being morbid,
maybe
I promise.
How they broadcast in the afterlife.
You think in the afterlife there's a broadcaster's place where they go, good morning and welcome to Dead Air. It's me, your favorite DJ from your favorite radio station when you were a child. Yeah. Imagine DJs are like trapped in their own separate hell just because they annoyed people for so much of their lives. This is DJ Hell, and I am your host. I mean, every single day you get like the same old voices that you grew up with the same features about what happened on this day in history and all that shit. Imagine that. Oh, that would be horrible. Truly the worst.
It's May the 4th, and that means Charlie Sheen's birthday.
Yes, 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 yes. But you say May the 4th, and you know what that means, because I'm a Star Wars fan, so I have to go, May the 4th be with you. Obviously.
Yes.
So well done.
Thank you, Obi Kenobi.
No, don't. You don't know anything about Star Wars. Don't say anything. You'll embarrass yourself. It's going to be bad.
Princess Leia.
No,
Layla.
You see, you don't even know the name. Just stop it, Sia. You're going to hurt yourself. It's not good. May the 4th be with you. So this comes from Star Wars, and may the Force be with you is what the characters say. And the Force is like this energy which binds everything in the universe together. And so when they say that, they mean almost like if I say bless you, you know, may you have fortune and good, you know, good things. So Star Wars fans say that to each other.
And please just know we can only use that phrase 4 more times in today's show before we have to start paying Lucas what's his face.
Yeah, well, he doesn't even own it anymore, remember? Now it's Disney's. So it belongs to
Disney.
But
he's made enough money, right?
Oh, are you joking? He's made so much money. I think he is the richest man in entertainment history, I think.
Because your brother told us about the merchandising deal that he got.
That's right. Yeah, I think George Lucas is probably the richest guy in entertainment history. I don't think there's anyone who's made more money than him. I'm trying to think now. Spielberg's nowhere near, because Spielberg's, while he's a brilliant storyteller and a great director and everything, he didn't create a product like George Lucas did. Not on that level. Stan Lee is dead, but the Marvel Universe is quite big. I mean, I think Star Wars is bigger than that. I think it may be bigger. Harry Potter is not as big as Star Wars. Lord of the Rings isn't as big as Star Wars. So I think George takes it, hey? I think he's got so much of money. He never needs to do a single thing again. But, you know, I was having this discussion because, you know, I've got a lot of Star Wars nerds in my life, and this is what we talk about rather than actually having to address the important questions of existence. And we were talking about how we wish that George Lucas was still involved in a more direct way, because those last three movies weren't as good as they could have been, especially the middle one of the last three. Last Jedi, I think it was called. Ugh, what a toilet movie.
Right.
Yeah, and if George Lucas had actually, because you could see that the guy who, Rian Johnson, I think his name is, he was the one who wrote the script and directed the second one. And that was just so toilet. It was so, so toilet. You can see that they had to rescue it by completely revising the third movie of this last trilogy. And I don't think people should forgive him. It's, you know, you ruin people's childhood. You play with their understanding of right and wrong. You mess up their characters they grew up with.
Do you know what his feelings are towards the franchise now? Has he completely washed his hands of it? Or maybe why don't they use him as like a consultant?
Well, they do sort of bring him in every now and then, but I don't know. I mean, you know, there's so many of us who, like, I just love those stories. And even if someone screwed it up as badly as they did in the second last movie, I'll still watch it. I haven't watched it since seeing it in the cinema because it was so disappointing. You know what it was, Sia, more than anything else? You know when you're growing up and you've got your childhood heroes on movies? You know, like, for me, it was maybe Tom Cruise in Top Gun, Luke Skywalker from Star Wars,
Ariel and the Little Mermaid for me. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, Ariel and the Little Mermaid for you and Meghan Markle. For you two, yeah. But, you know, kind of even Mel Gibson and Braveheart, those kinds of things. Those are your heroes. Now, imagine they take those heroes, which is what they did to Luke Skywalker, and they turn them into these pathetic old men who are weak and have no character, and they resign from the world, and they become these bitter and twisted. It's such a slap in the face. You know, you build up in your head that what happened after the movies was that these heroes went on to be revered and celebrated, and they just got better and better. So they take the happily ever after and they ruin it. And that's what they did with characters like Luke Skywalker and Han Solo, frankly, you know, Harrison Ford's character. And I won't forgive that easily. Anyway, enough about that. We do have important things to talk about today, by the way. And Bulelo will be joining us just now. He is at gym this morning, Bulelo. Talk about an overachiever. Yeah, every time I see him at the studio, he's like, he's talking about how he went for a 230,000 kilometer run this morning, and he constantly posts these pictures, you know, those boring like map screenshots of how far he ran, and it's just so boring. I mean, obviously I'm a jealous prick because I'm not in the shape that he's in, and I feel a little bit jealous. So here he is. Let's put him on.
Right on you.
Yeah, let's put him on. Bulelo, I hate you because you were at gym now?
I was at the gym and it ran a little bit over.
Better
so
person.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, you're a better person.
You ran over gym.
But I do hate you when you post those pictures of how far you've run and how fit you are, and it's, you know, it's almost like seeing Ben and his like constant physical improvement. The two of you make the rest of us feel like slobs. And I was so proud of myself because I lost like 3.5 kilograms a month ago. And I don't know if I've put it back on or if I've managed to keep it off because I haven't weighed myself. I'm too scared to try. And that's just nothing in your world. I mean, that's pathetic. And I'm sure that you see most of us as these fat, lumbering, slow, ugly losers. And I'm sure you judge us quietly or loudly. In your case, probably loudly.
Well, not all of you are ugly.
But fat.
But certainly the rest of the things you said. Yeah, the rest of the things you said, for sure. Slobbish.
Yeah.
You know, people are... Here's the thing.
I probably deserve that because all of my life I've been very rude to fat people. And here I am being judged as a fat person by you. So, okay. I got to take it.
This is the real circle of life.
I have to earn it.
Oh my gosh. Hey.
Guys, can we just get the really important news out of the way? Look at this.
Ooh.
Bill and Melinda Gates are getting divorced.
Okay.
After 27 years of marriage, the same amount of time that Nelson Mandela spent in prison, and the same number of years since we became a democracy. And Bill and Melinda Gates calling it quits. Now, look at those two. You know, let me ask you this. Okay. My friend, she said that her parents really, they don't get along anymore. They find each other very irritating. They're both in their late 60s at this point, the parents, and the mother keeps on threatening. She's like, I'm going to leave him. He's so irritating. He's half deaf and blind. He's stupid. He's got his boring old habits, which all old men have. I want out of this life. I don't want to be with him anymore. So she says to him, now she says to her mother, she says, Mom, I want you to consider what you're actually asking for here. Do you really want to give up on even the semblance of kind of family life that we do have when we see all of you together and when you get to see your grandchildren and you get to be with everybody? And do you want to give that up to go and live in a SummerCon apartment on your own in your twilight years? I mean, maybe you find someone, maybe you won't. Probably you won't because... you know, at this stage of your life, you know more about you than anyone can catch up on. And is that really what you want? Is to like live in, you know, like Sunning Hill in a little flat on your own as you get older and as those stairs become more difficult to climb up and down? And I think that's such a good way of looking at it. Of course, it's very different for Bill and Melinda Gates because she could buy three quarters of South Africa with her petty cash, and we would all have to work for her like the pyramid slaves. And she'd still have change to spend afterwards.
Is she going to get the Bezos deal, do you think? Because do you think her and Bezos' wife are going to go to lunch and go, "We got him, babe.
You see,
we got him."
It depends. It depends on what the nature of their actual agreement, their contractual agreement is. Because, you know, you can have the prenup, as they call it in America, but as we call it in this country, an ANC.
And they do. So they did sign one, and according to the papers, the actual divorce papers that they signed yesterday, she is not asking for any spousal support, and neither is he. Well, obviously, because he's richer. So they are going to get out of this very clean and simple.
Well, if you read this here, I like that C has found that information, but it says here, "We no longer believe we can grow together as a couple in the next phase of our lives," they said in a statement on Monday afternoon. Now, you know, there are lots of people who hate Bill Gates, and there are lots of people who think conspiratorially that he is trying to control the world and that he's this evil megalomaniac, and I don't have any of those feelings about Bill Gates. I don't really think about him very much. It's amazing how we only talk about prenups and settlements when it's rich people. Nobody cares when it's two poor people are getting divorced. You know, no one goes, "Oh, well, I hope she doesn't end up with that shitty old broken down car. I hope he doesn't get that pair of old slippers that she's always threatened to throw at him."
I think the truth is poor people don't get divorced. It's too expensive.
That's true. Jeez. That's probably true. Let's just look at these two, right? So the next phase of their lives, they're also in their late 60s, maybe?
I'd say
early 60s.
They have a 9-year difference, if I'm not mistaken, between the two of them. I'd say she's in her late 50s, early 60s.
Well, I mean, you know, she's a very eligible woman. I mean, I'm thinking of flying over to where are they again? Seattle. I'm thinking of flying over to Seattle and really getting to know her. I mean, I will hang around in whatever places she's most likely to hang around in. Dude, I don't need to prove anything anymore. There was a stage.
To be specific, Melinda's 56 and Bill is 65.
Okay. All right. So neither of them are past their sell-by date. I mean, they both have some potential to kind of have another phase in their lives. So that's not bullshit. And, you know, if you've got the money, you've got the wherewithal, your children love you, but they've moved out of the house, so they don't need you to be together anymore. It's not going to ruin their psychology. I think maybe this is a very adult and mature way to do things. And of course, people are going to go, you know, the people who hate Bill Gates or people who don't like what he does in terms of his philanthropy, or they don't like Microsoft or whatever reason it is they hate him. Those people are going to say, "Oh yeah, you see his marriage failed and I hope he's miserable." And I don't feel that way at all. I'm like, you know what, dude, you and your wife have decided you've spent 27 years together. You've raised a bunch of kids. You've changed the world, the two of you. And she's been an equal partner in, as I understand it, in all the philanthropy that they do together. It's the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It's not the Bill Gates Foundation. And as far as I can tell,
what do you think?
As far as I can tell, she's been a massive support to him. So let them now go into this next phase and take them at their word, don't you think?
I admire Bill Gates for one thing. 100% guaranteed. He went to her and said, "Listen, here's $200 million. I don't want to fight. This mustn't get ugly in public. I'm trying to take down Apple. So please, I don't need it." I like that, because there's no way she'd walk away just, "Oh, we're not growing together." Rubbish. She got her 200 mil.
Yeah.
Bill sorted that out very quickly. Let's move on. I'm trying to take down those Apple monsters.
You don't think maybe she wanted to get away from him? Why do we always assume it's the man who wants to get away from the woman?
No, but listen, one thing the woman scorned, no matter what it is, especially if it's that she got her pound of flesh. It's, you know what, I stayed around for this long and who knows, stuff will come out, whatever. She got her 200 mil and Bill probably said, "Oh, perfect. Let's both get the hell out of here. I don't need this. I got better things. Plus, I'm Bill Gates. I'll have everyone as an option. I'm Bill Gates. Everyone's an option to me."
Sure.
So good for him. For me, in divorce, because I'm sorry I have to deliver this news this way, the divorces always work out for the woman, especially high profile. I'm always going to side with the guy. I'm always going to side with the guy.
You do make a good point. You do make a good point. And even though she's probably been an equal partner to him and has been a support and helped with the, you know, making the family unit work and all of those things, not helped, but probably was chief and she was the most instrumental in that marriage when it came to building the family and the, you know, the brand of Gates as a philanthropic organization and all the rest of it. I'm sure that she's more than done her bit, but she didn't invent Microsoft, you know. And it really, you know, like with Jeff Bezos, when we spoke about him, it's his money, but he's generous enough because there's so much of it to let Mackenzie, I think her name is, take, you know, half of what it was worth then. I think maybe Melinda and, you know, Bezos's ex, maybe they do get together with each other for lunch this week and they talk 100%. About, they talk about how good it is to have chosen. And really, you know, women choose men. It's not men who choose women in this world. The women choose men. And I think they'll get together and go, you know, the two of us, we have eagle eye. We could spot a winner from a mile. We deserve all of this money and more. And they'll clink champagne glasses and laugh about how good it is and how much fun they're still going to have. Good for them.
Well, you know, Sia, how about this? Uh-huh. I got it. I know you'll love this. Okay. Bill Gates' ex-wife, Bezos' ex-wife, Oprah, the big spread, the struggles of being with a maniacal billionaire. Gail comes in there serving them the champagne.
No, obviously. If you're going to have the struggles of being with a maniacal billionaire, you need to have poor old Stedman. He needs to be there. And he needs to be the equal, you know, he needs to be the Melinda to Oprah's boy. Poor Stephen.
I don't think they will, because they still want to be in that world. So look, we can speculate, because this is all speculation up until we're blue in the face. Mm-hmm. But if I really squint and try to read into it, my speculation is it's quite telling that they have three children, mm-hmm. and they waited until the youngest was 18. To be that says, okay, let's really keep it together for all of them.
Right.
And now she's 18, she's out of the house, then we can leave and go our separate ways. I do not think they were much of a romantic couple anymore,
Sia,
given the pressures of their role.
I hate to break it to you, but there are very few couples after, you know, having been together for more than 10 years who are still romantic together. Very few. You become like best friends.
Then you consider why most of them would stay together. Mm. Maybe it's for the kids. Maybe it's a financial reason. Maybe, this is as good as it gets. When the world is your oyster as a multi-billionaire, you can still have, in your 60s, you can still have two other iterations of your life.
Sure.
So I think they stayed for this youngest one. And now they go, actually, okay. Cool, I'm done.
It's called the empty nest syndrome. It's a real thing.
That's also a part of it. But maybe they waited for Anne Douglas to die. You know?
Oh Lord.
That was what they
That's
what they waited for. I mean, that's what I would have waited.
True. Look at that. Respect.
God bless her. Shame she died this week. We spoke about her yesterday, but I didn't share that picture, which I think is such a, you know. There's Anne. There she is. Look at her. Douglas.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, can you picture Bill and Melinda at dinner talking about, how much they're looking forward to Christmas and where are we spending Christmas and, oh my gosh, who's, you know, what are we going to wrap up for Phoebe? No, I picture Bill as talking about vaccine rollouts and the importance of ending malaria. Oh, how romantic.
But can I tell you something? There are a lot of powerful couples who don't talk about, you know, that flowery shit that you were talking about just now. I don't see myself being married to anyone one day unless we're talking about things that matter. I don't want to be sitting there talking about, you know, the dreary ups and downs of our emotions. I could only be in a relationship. I could only be in a relationship where we respect each other mentally enough to not have to talk about dreary shit. I don't ever want someone. It doesn't matter who I'm with. If she's not smart and we can't talk about smart things, then it's not a relationship. Then it's really just a transaction. It's like, we're together, we're going to make kids together, we're going to have sex together, but I don't really respect you. And that's not the kind of
thing
I want.
Doesn't mean one isn't smart, but do you want to wake up in the morning, pour orange juice, and talk about income inequality?
Sure.
No, sometimes I really do want to skin out about
that's what we do every day. That's what we do on the show. We wake up on the show, we talk about that shit.
Yeah.
Sure. Oh my gosh.
But it's why I've always said good looking, especially women, again, is that there is an underlying anxiety to them, is that that will end. Being good looking ends, which is why I always say good looking is not interesting anymore, especially I'm like 35 now. It gets less and less interesting. You still need to be some sort of looking. But smart is far more, far more attractive to me, because that'll last until you're 70 for exactly the reason you're saying, Gareth.
Correct.
I could not agree more. Is marry smart, hot ends.
And Sia, you have to have things to talk about like we do every morning, whether it's politics or the economy or the coronavirus or vaccines or, you know, or each other's feelings and what we've gone through, each other's lives. But there's a component of that that you have to have a respect for the person that you're interacting with. If you guys are just together for like childish romance and that starts going away after a couple of years, then what are you left with? A big empty hole. There's nothing that you could fill that with. And then you do start hating each other. You become passive aggressive with each other. You start blaming each other for the bad things that are going on in your life. I'm telling you, there are loads of people in those kinds of relationships, and it is not fun. I have friends who are stuck in that kind of thing, where one of them is distinctly more ambitious or more intelligent and more connected and engaged in the world than the other one is. And it can be extremely frustrating. There's usually a very patronizing relationship between the two. Either the one who's being patronized doesn't realize it, which is even more terrible, or they do and they just accept it.
Well, Lena, you look distraught.
No, because you know what? It's the stupid Instagram psychology today where someone's sitting by a lake and they've got their back and they're wearing tights and they go, you should marry someone that's the opposite to you. And you know what? If you're an accountant, marry a tattoo artist. I shut the hell up. Here's how you do it. Find somebody with the same drive and interests of you. Correct. And then choose to fall in love with them for the rest of your life. Well, it's a choice.
And then if it doesn't last forever, ever, ever, like Bill and Melinda Gates have decided they're going to call it quits after 27 years. You know what? You've had a great innings together. You've made a huge difference in the world. There can be no doubt that when either of these people, one of them had to drop dead tomorrow, that the world would say, ah, oh, that person was inconsequential. They've both made an enormous contribution in their own way. And therefore, it is now selfish time for them. They stuck it out for the kids. They stuck it out for, I don't know, Microsoft, maybe for the foundation, maybe because they just wanted to keep it tidy. They were still settling the arrangements. Who knows? It's none of our business, because the only reason we're talking about them is because they're hugely rich. We would not talk about them if they were poor. And that's the problem. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of ordinary middle class or working class people in South Africa who get divorced every day. No one is involved in their divorces. No one actually cares unless there's scandal or there's money.
Have the self-worth in life to move on.
Yeah. See ya?
Here's another thought that I had when I read about this. I don't know. You let me know your thoughts about this. Is there such a thing as being too eligible?
No.
Whether it's Bill or Melinda, I would sort of be slightly intimidated by that, or approaching someone like that, even if I was a meager, in inverted commas, billionaire, because you think, whoa, what, like, they have the money, they have the power, which is sometimes even more important than money. They
what
are
do you mean?
Worldly,
they're intimidating? No, see, people.
But there's other billionaires,
and people.
There's rich billionaire women
but,
too.
But also, people find each other. Who's Bezos's ex with now? I think it was a personal trainer or something like that.
Mackenzie is now with married to a school teacher.
There we go. He was the teacher of her kids or something, right?
Yeah, I think once you get to that level.
Sure.
Given the fact that as well, there's so many few people at that point, I don't think you can get any higher. I think they'll all have to downscale.
it's not about downscaling. It's at that point, maybe you just, you want companionship sometimes. Sometimes you just want someone who makes you feel good. I don't know what Mackenzie or Melinda want. I can't imagine. But I do think the idea of them being intimidating is not, like, for some people, that's a thrill. Like, I don't believe if you put Bulelo in a lift and Melinda Gates got in, he would talk her to death. He wouldn't be all shy and retiring into the corner of the lift.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't be trying to make a move because maybe you don't find her interesting or attractive, but if Melinda Gates got into the lift, you'd have something to say to her, right, Bulelo?
Absolutely. Oh. I mean, the things she's seen and done, I'll never, she's probably been with scientists or philosophers and great thinkers and people that have pushed medicine forward tenfold and just things like that. She's, also when you're rich, you've got time to think about the human condition and you meet people on the next level of thinking about society. So, absolutely.
Robert says Bill wants to start banging 30-year-olds. Maybe. You don't know.
Hey, can't blame me.
Tracy, at least he had the decency. But at least he had the decency, if he does want to, we don't know that. But if he does, at least he had the decency to wait until he was divorced from Melinda to make that happen. Tracy says, in your 60s, the used goods market is a tough one. You get someone who is set in their ways and who did not grow old and used to their quirks, habits, etc. Absolutely. That's why also a lot of people just stick it out. They go, okay, well, I'm not really thrilled with this person. Usually it's the women who look at the men and they go, I don't know, this is not great. But it's better than starting again because that's hard work.
And what of this? I think that's a really interesting thing. I've always wondered why you wouldn't want to stay attractive to your partner. You know, sometimes the working out thing, a lot of people make it about the aesthetics and the outer world. I've always wondered, if you're in a relationship, why wouldn't you want to stay attractive for your partner? Because that's a part of it, right? Is if we got together and it was a certain way and those sparks, is why wouldn't you want to be attractive for your partner to keep, to do your best to reignite that part of the fire?
Well, here's an interesting thing that I was listening to a podcast the other day where there were these two people talking about how you've got to keep a relationship interesting and you've got to keep it sexy and exciting. And this is something I think a lot of people just take for granted because Hollywood sets you up as, the end of the movies when they get happily married and then they stay together forever. You just assume that after the movie ends, everything's going to be great. But that's where the real work starts. Like in any relationship, you have to keep the romance going. And hey, life happens, man. I'm not going to tell anybody how to do that. But it's hard work to keep a relationship interesting, especially if you've been together for more than 10 years. That's a long, long time. To keep finding something to get excited about. And it doesn't matter how much money you have, because in fact, if you're a workaholic and you're ambitious, you have less time with each other. So you have to work so much harder on that time, because it's easy to just get tired and blame work and moan and just talk about work. I mean, that would be even worse. So you have to find a way of making it interesting.
It's interesting what you're saying. An elder of mine, we were talking about this. She was talking to me about marriage and, relationships. She says one thing for her. So she's been with her husband. It'll be 50 plus years. And she said around about after 10 years, you have to every single day make a deliberate. And it's like you said, I love what you said there. It is a brutal thing to be in a relationship.
Yeah,
but every single day after 10 years or so, she said, you have to make a deliberate decision. It's not Hollywood flowery. You make a deliberate decision to love your partner. And it has to be every day. It's like eating an elephant with a teaspoon type of thing. And it was quite a very interesting conversation with her. And because we were just talking about these things and exactly what you're saying. After 10 years, it's a deliberate call every day. It's boring. It's Groundhog Day daily. Mm. So it is not easy, man. If you're in a relationship out there, hey, thoughts and prayers.
Thoughts and prayers. It's a tough decision that I had to make, though.
It is a tough decision because you are really, you're not going to live in the same house anymore. You aren't going to see the kids at the same time necessarily as much as you used to. Maybe you won't be traveling together to things. It's a big change.
Also, the whole world is involved in their life now.
Yeah, but honestly, I have to tell you, that's one of the things that I've I found this brilliant book a while ago, and I haven't read it for ages, but I read it probably about 3 or 4 years ago. It's called The Four Agreements, and it's mm-hmm. about the four things that you've got to do, and this goes for any of us, right, from Bill Gates and Oprah Winfrey right down to, you know, meager little us. You know,
at the bottom of the food
chain. So the first one is like, just say what you mean, you know, and be careful what language you use. And they've been very precise about their language in this divorce. Second thing is, don't take anything personally. Nothing others do is because of you. And when you decide to do something, what other people say is a projection of their reality. It's not your words. It's not your thoughts. It's not your dreams. It's them. They're projecting their life into yours. So right now, we're all talking about them. They don't care, and they shouldn't care. The third thing is, you can't make assumptions. And we've said this already. It's all speculation on our part, right? And the fourth one is, always do your best. And I think that they're going to do their best. They've already done, objectively in their lives, the best that they could do. I mean, none of us in this conversation can say we've done as well as the Gates couple. So, you know, let them have it.
Close.
I just want to quickly refer to something. I got a message yesterday from someone who listens to our show every day. And she said, please, would you consider just talking about this on your show, the importance of using an oximeter, you know, one of those pulse oximeters, which measures the oxygen levels in your blood. Because she said, my husband passed away on Friday due to COVID complications. There is a silent but deadly disease that is related to COVID called hypoxia. Your body shows no signs that your blood oxygen levels are going down unless you actually check them. No shortness of breath or difficulty in breathing. Please make it known to everybody. Kind regards, Debbie. So, I mean, Debbie, that's a very sad, first of all, my condolences to you for you know, the loss of your husband. That's an awful, awful piece of news to have got on Friday. And really, we do feel like a big community on this show. So, everybody, I'm sure, shares with me in sending you our sincerest condolences. But these oximeters you could buy, you know, they're cheap. You could get them at the shops. And if you are diagnosed with COVID, it might be worth having one just to keep an eye on those things. Because, yes, I don't know a whole lot about hypoxia, but I will tell you that if you can monitor this kind of thing, it'll give you a better chance of knowing what your body's doing and what's going on. And you know, you can never be better to be safe than sorry. You can never be too careful.
Well said. So this morning, so the guy who trains me is arguably the top trainer in maybe in Africa. He trains a few Olympians, and I was with an Olympian this morning in the training session, and even they are on the oximeters. And I had one today. Daily. I mean, I train with this guy 4 times a week. So even not me, but these elite athletes, proper guys are on it. So there's no reason we shouldn't. As what did you call it eloquently earlier? Fat, slobbish. There's no reason why us regulars aren't
Ruth,
using
I love this. Ruth says, I love how we're listening to three single people talking about how to keep a marriage going. Yeah, good point, Ruth. Great point. And Linda says, if you marry or are with the right person, then I don't think it takes so much work. My personal opinion is, I've been with my husband for 20 years. Well, you know what? Some people do. They luck out. They find the right person, and it's just easy. Mzizi says, really inspiring conversation, guys. I just got married a month ago, so congratulations, Mzizi. No, congrats, man. I hope it goes well. It's not...
all the best.
No, I think Mzizi is being very sarcastic when we talk about relationships not lasting.
Of course.
God bless you, Mzizi.
All right. We've got to get to headlines, so let's do that quickly and see what's happening in the world. First things first, this is from News 24. A man who knew he had COVID-19 but kept going to work was rightfully dismissed, says the court. Wow, this is big. An assistant butcher at National Meat Supplier Escort, who defied COVID-19 regulations and went to work even though he tested positive for the virus, has been dismissed. This is a recent decision by the Labour Court in Johannesburg, in which Judge Edwin Tlolalemaje, yes, overturned a previous ruling by the Commission for Conciliation, Mediation, and Arbitration that he be reinstated with a final written warning. His name is Sturman Mohotsi. So in other words, if you lie about having COVID And if you know you have COVID and you still go to work and you don't declare that you have COVID to your coworkers, there's a precedent case now that you could go, you could be, you could actually be thrown out. You know, you could be chased out of your job.
If you're eating escort meat, COVID's the least of your problems. The meat will get you first.
Yeah, they're the Poloni guys, aren't they?
Yes, they are. That's
the public trash. There's a public spat that is broke. I knew this was going to happen, and I saw Nkosi Sanat Lamini Zuma yesterday say, "Oh, can we please have some dignity and some careful movements within the Zulu royal family." Yeah, sure. Good luck with that. Haven't I been saying for the last couple of weeks since King Goodwill died, you've got to get your heir on the throne ASAP if you want this thing to work. But obviously, now there's a public spat been playing out between members of the Zulu royal family. Siblings of the late King Goodwill Zwelithini are accusing the Prime Minister, Mangosuthu Buthelezi, of excluding them from key family meetings and decisions. Prince Mbonisi Mxolisi Vulindlela and Mathubesizwe Zulu, as well as Princess Thembi Zulu Ntlovu, addressed members of the media on Monday. They've alleged that Buthelezi is sowing divisions between them and the children of the late king. "We want a meeting with the prince," they say. "We want to hear what he has to say." I mean, this is just, it's degenerating, and this cannot end well. However this goes, what it does is it diminishes the crown. It diminishes the royal family's prestige and reputation with ordinary people, because they look at this and go, "Oh no!" So they are just like a normal family. Great. It has the opposite effect. I know you don't care about royal families, Bulelo, but
and I know you do, and I know you give credence to it.
No, if this is your game, if your game is that you're a prince, and then you make it look like you're just ordinary, then your princeliness is worthless.
Got you.
Right? So like, you're in a marketing business here. Your business is royalty. So behave like a fucking royal. Anyway, I don't know what to say about them, so we'll just leave it at that. Like, you're just going to screw it
up.
You've said enough.
No, Gareth, you do know what to say, and you have said it. Let's be clear.
Former Prasa CEO Lucky Montana said that it was not true that he abused his position and bought properties for his own personal benefit. But we remember that there were journalists who went to look at the monstrous house that you were building for yourself. And you threw bricks. He threw bricks at them. Do you remember?
I do.
That was a big story. So what are you talking about? Do you think we don't remember anything, Lucky Montana, you moron? What's wrong with this guy?
There's the internet now, soz. No.
He told the State Capture Commission on Monday that he felt his reputation has been tainted by these allegations. Really? What reputation? Of course. Since when have you had a reputation? You left in a cloud of embarrassment. I mean, he says the investigators are lying about him. The damage is done. He says, "I've come forward to respond to lies that are being dealt with by the commission in a particular way." Ah, please. Is there anybody except Lucky Montana's mom and dad who think that that's true? Anyone?
Maybe if he's blessing someone. If he's blessing someone, she's the only person who believes him.
Jesus. He's going to say anyone who's benefiting from his money.
So bad. prosecutors in Paris said on Monday they'd asked judges to drop a case accusing senior members of the French armed forces of complicity in a massacre of Tutsis in the Rwandan genocide in 1994. The call to drop the 15-year-old case came after a major report in March into allegations about France's role in the genocide. Survivors of the 1994 slaughter in the hills of Bisesero in western Rwanda had accused French troops of deliberately abandoning them to Hutu extremists who within days murdered them. So they're not saying the French army went in and murdered these people, but they didn't exactly protect them against the Hutus. But then you could equally level those charges at the Catholic Church in Rwanda, who had a very powerful role to play and were in dereliction of the duty of looking after the souls of their own congregants. I mean, a lot of the massacring happened inside of and outside of churches, which should make
my mom said I must stop talking about religion the way I do, because I'm very derisory about it. She listens to obviously this show and my show, and she said I'm too derisory of religion because she loves a bit of Jesus. So to the Catholic Church, come on, guys, let's do better.
It's been well documented.
Is that where you,
the Catholic Church? If I'm going to be generous, I can say that they did not cover themselves in glory in terms of their participation in and their wanton cruelty and their abetting and aiding of some of the most genocidal lunatics in that country during that time. The Catholic Church has some blood on its hands, and that's not an unfair thing to say. There are countless books that have been written about this. There are people who have first-hand stories they can tell about how these churches became the locus of so much of the killing for very ugly reasons, which are no longer controversial. There isn't even much of a fight being put up by the Vatican anymore. There's just a huge amount of apology that is required. So let's just leave it at that. But the French army saying that, you know, we may have had a role in this. They might have to go to court to defend themselves. Either way, it's not going to bring those people back, is it? So there it is.
It is not.
And then finally, this is Joe Biden's story. Sorry.
Oh, dear.
Joe Biden has lifted the U.S. annual refugee cap, bowing to backlash from his party after he initially opted to stick by the Trump-era figure. It's just amazing how, like, the media and the Democratic Party is so enmeshed with each other in America at the moment that if Donald Trump put $10 trillion of artificial money and basically borrowed against the future of America like Joe Biden has, if he threw that into the economy and then said, we've got a great economy, people would have torn him to shreds. When he put refugee children into these detainment centers for their own protection, that's certainly the American government line, whether it's the Democrats or the Republicans in power, right? Under these foil blankets and these huge detainment centers, which are hardly COVID-free, Donald Trump was accused of putting children in cages. Do you remember that? It's a big story. Children in cages. Meanwhile, it had happened under Obama, and it's been happening under Joe Biden, but it just doesn't get the same amount of ire. I wonder why that is. Anyway, he's decided to raise the cap from 15,000 people to 62,500 people after outrage from progressives and refugee agencies. Because these days, outrage, you just tantrum and then the government does what you want, especially if you're on social media. Biden said...
True.
Yeah?
No. Sorry. When we finish this, to that point, something just happened in English football, and it's not about football, so you don't need to cringe about it.
No.
To that exact point.
I know where you're going. Is this that pitch invasion at Old Trafford?
You know what? And I said this on the show, is it nothing makes me more sick than us allowing these people. Socrates put it so well, without laws, we are but animals. This idea that you do things that way, and we bend to you, and everybody goes, yay! Yeah. Is so sickening. We live in South Africa. We know where that takes us.
Yeah.
Every time you respond to these people and you do what they must, people always think our violence is justified, right? You know who said that? A guy called Adolf.
Yeah.
You know who said that before him?
I knew
that. Guy called Joseph Stalin.
I knew there was an Adolf or a Stalin comparison coming at some point. But you are right. You're right. I mean, without laws, what do we have? So
Socrates was already mentioned.
Must we be allowing every adolescent, even if they're older than that in years, but if their mentality and their level of maturity is adolescent, must we allow every tantruming adolescent in the world to get exactly what they want every time they have a tantrum? No. That's called bad parenting. Right?
I totally agree. And eventually those pitchforks will turn on you, by the way. Everyone who thinks, yes, man, get them.
Yeah, the crocodile will eat you last. And this is what's happening in America at the moment. So Biden says they're going to let in 62,500 refugees, I think a month or whatever it is. And apparently they're going to raise the number of refugees admitted next year to 125,000. So you know what? Go for it, Joe. I mean, we can see what's happening here. And don't for a minute be under any illusion that this is about him being compassionate. Because these people's, the reason for their migration into America is because of violence and a lack of opportunity in their own countries. Honduras, Guatemala, Mexico, wherever it may be. And they're coming into America and they're going to have horrible jobs in America and have to work in, you know, in really menial jobs. And their life might be a little bit better than it would have been in Guatemala and Honduras or whatever. But a lot of these kids are also being trafficked by gangs and by drug cartels. And the children become an anchor for the parents to come later. Even if the parents don't come, those kids, what kind of life do they have being sent into a country where the government is your mom and dad? I mean, that's just not going to go well, as you can imagine. But Biden somehow comes across to people in the media as a much nicer person than Trump, where Trump said, don't bring your children here. We can't be their parents. Which is more compassionate in the long run? I don't know.
You know what's brutal for people to hear, especially South Africans, because we're an unruly bunch, is that without laws... We need to accept this. We are a lawless... We are a lawless sort of degenerative country, and we are eroding from the very fabric. That without laws, there is no freedom. So the reason all of us run to America and Britain and Australia is that even though we know the pinch is terrible that side, because you got to be on time for work, you're late, the train's never late, and actually there's cameras everywhere watching you, it's nanny state, is that somewhere in us we know we need to be controlled, we need laws, otherwise there is no freedom. These people don't want to go to America. You think people want to leave Guatemala to go to America, to leave their home? Nobody wants to leave their own soil. And there's such a great book called The Bottom Billion, by a guy called Paul Collier, and he puts something beautiful in there. He says, no one wants to leave their home, get on a boat, and go across the sea to another country. Nobody wants to do that. Do you know how horrible circumstances have to be where you are?
That's exactly the point. And that's why I'm sick and tired of hearing these arguments from people, particularly activists. If someone says they're an activist, I kind of dismiss them almost out of hand. But you know, these people who say, oh, well, America is such a racist country, or, you know, Britain is such an unfair place, or Sweden is so mean. Well, then why would all the traffic be going into those countries and very little coming out? And if it's so bad, how come the standard of living, even for the poorest people in those places, is better than the standard of living for an average person in 90% of the rest of the world? I don't believe you. I just don't believe you. If net immigration into a country is more than net emigration out of a country, that country is probably a good place to be.
And the bedrock of it, and we'll start with Scandinavia, they are the oldest democracies on earth as far as we know, right?
Yeah.
Is the bedrock is the laws.
Mm.
Is the refined laws over 1,000 years. Without laws, obviously there's a myriad of circumstances to America, Britain, whatever. But without laws, you are nothing. Forget wealth, forget conquering the world. Yeah, if your country is lawless,
I agree with you. I remember speaking to someone who really has made an enormous amount of money in his life. He's a very, very wise man, super, super smart, just a genius businessman. And he said to me, I asked him which countries he invests most of his money in, and he said the ones with rule of law, full stop.
There we go.
Mm.
That's his number
one. Without laws, you're nothing.
That's his number one condition for doing anything in a country. He's got to have rule of law. And in this country, you can debate whether or not we have it, but certainly it's not at its best strength, to put it lightly. Okay, look, I mean, this is very heavy stuff for so early in the morning.
This is what you said you wanted in a relationship.
I know, Sia, I know. And we've done that now, but now it's time for something from Fern, which is just really interesting and completely besides the point. So Fern, who listens to us and often will send us comments and emails, she says, I heard you guys discussing Prince Andrew's house in Windsor Great Park because someone was arrested for wandering around there. Someone who's clearly crazy because they've been put in an asylum. But anyway, I mean, who would, you know, you'd have to be crazy to hang around anywhere where Prince Andrew is. but it reminded Fern of her brother's favorite royal anecdote. He and his family lived very near the park for years and would often go for a walk on the Long Walk, which is a, you know, it's a long walk. It's a long road that cuts right through the park up to the castle gates. The kids would put on their rollerblades, despite many signs prohibiting rollerblading on the walkway. One summer afternoon, they were ambling along when they realized a car had been slowly following them for a while. My brother turned and locked eyes with a woman in her Land Rover. It was the Queen. She was quite unperturbed, perfectly happy to crawl along behind them. She waved and smiled, and they immediately stepped aside, trying to hide their kids in their rollerblades. She merely beckoned to them to carry on. My brother is an ice skating instructor and used to teach Beatrice and Eugenie. The Queen paid for their tuition, so every month he would get a check from her. I often wonder if he kept one, but I don't think so. Isn't that a nice story? That's cute, huh?
You know what I've always wondered about being the Queen? Like, this is boss levels on another thing.
Mm.
When she pays for stuff, do you think she obviously uses cash? It's just like, ah, there I am again. You know, just, hey, you know. Just, I've always wondered what that must feel like. Like, she Lizzie, never, you're a beautiful
person. Interestingly enough, she...
Like, from her or from her office? I don't think it's from her.
No, she doesn't even carry money. The Queen never has money.
Oh, man. I would if I was her.
Of course, there's lots you would do if you were.
Yeah. Be like, there I am again. God, you are beautiful, Elizabeth.
Oh, man. Here's a quick reminder for everybody. Mother's Day is Sunday, this coming Sunday. So you better have some kind of card, or you might as well make a call, or you might buy a present, or you might want to arrange something. Just letting you know, because, you know, people tend to forget, and then Mother's Day comes along and everybody's rushing to get flowers or something. Do it.
Does everybody need a day? Yeah. Like does everyone need something?
I know. You know what you need.
Everyone does, Bulelo.
You know what you need.
Crying in a bucket.
You need one thing for the week. That's what you need today.
Yes.
This is something we look forward to. So today, and this might be dangerous in this country, but what the hell? Today, you're going to welcome a passing stranger into your house, and you're going to offer them something to
eat. What the Oxford Road is going on here?
Oh, it's about being a good neighbor and being nice to people. So, I mean, obviously, if it's a meth head, try not to let them in. if it's someone who looks like they're already drunk at 9 a.m, don't let them in. I mean, I'm saying to you, use some discretion here. But there might be someone, you know, walking past in an overall, it looks like they're stressing because they've got a big, busy day ahead, and say to them, hey, do you need a cup of tea, or would you like this chocolate, or... Maybe you don't invite them into your house, but you invite them into your yard. You like say hello. You just treat them nicely. You don't think that
as a stranger.
Yeah, like
you are standing looking at people and saying, "Do you want this chocolate?"
Well, look, Sia. Why did you have to make it creepy? I'm saying, do something nice for someone who you don't know, who happens to just geographically be in your vicinity today.
Okay.
Maybe it's you let them into your office. So someone walks in today and they go, hi, I'm actually looking for Mbulelo. And you go, come in, have a seat. Can I get you a cup of tea? And then you go and find Mbulelo for them.
You know, I like that.
It doesn't have to be weird. But try and be nice to someone who you wouldn't normally pay any attention to because it's not on your agenda for the day. And maybe it is. Maybe you see someone who's busy, you know, mowing someone else's lawn, or they're busy cleaning up the sidewalk, or they work for the municipality or something, and go out there with a cup, a disposable cup, for God's sake. They can throw it away when they finish. You don't have to sit there and talk to them and bother them while they're working. Say, hey, do you want some tea? Why not?
I like that.
Yeah,
I'm gonna take you up on that. And no, really, Garrett, that's a beautiful message.
It's your one thing,
because
for the
week. Not an empath. No. Awesome. Yeah. I really, really like that one, and I'm gonna take you up actually on that. That's a beautiful message. That's a very nice one.
It's a pity that you aren't the stranger today, because then I could give you a cup of coffee and you get on with your day, Mbulelo. Because we are doing
that's
a thing.
Not the assignment.
We are all meeting at the office later today, so maybe we do something, maybe we don't. We'll see how it goes. Anyway, all right. I've just got one quick thing. This is so embarrassing. My laptop, which is new, it's like a year and a half, maybe 2 years at most, old. So it's not, you know, it's not an old computer. It works very well. Been using it for the show for since we started doing the show from various locations on the internet, and it works very well. But my space bar is starting to stick. I don't know what that is all about. I believe it's a problem with Apple's MacBook Pros or whatever they are from that generation. So it's starting to stick. So sometimes it'll type up like 3 or 4 or 5 or even 10 words in a row without putting spaces between them, even though I've hit the space bar. And then, you know how you sometimes don't check an email before you press send? And then it just makes me look stupid. So I've got to have that sorted out at some point, which is kind of a pain in the backside. But I know I'm not the only one who's had this problem, because I went and Googled it yesterday just to see, and there are millions of people who've had the same issue. So I think it's easy for them to fix. I just have to go and do it.
Oh, that must be murder for you, Gareth. It would be like not working out for me, because you are a wordsmith, you know, for we all know how beautifully you write. I mean, that must be killing you.
Now I have to. Well, it just makes, I mean, I already type like a chimpanzee at a typewriter, but because I go clack, 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 clack. I don't, you know, I'm quite rough with the keyboard anyway. But the fact is now I have to go back and read every single sentence twice to make sure I haven't. Because the kind of mistakes that you make when your space bar does work are bad enough. But when it doesn't work, you end up with these long words which are made up of, you know, a sentence and a half. It's ridiculous. So I need to figure that out.
Well, if you carry on typing like that, it will just make you sound like you're typing in Kamala Harris. and now Kamala Harris is now a term. It's a language.
Really?
My old recipe time like this.
Oh, God, she's got the most annoying voice. Have you heard how Kamala Harris, when she tries to sound empathetic, she takes her voice down? It's just worst play acting you've ever heard in your life. She's like such an artificial person.
Oh, wait, so I'm assuming you didn't see the video of, what's his title again? Second Gentleman. Yes, Second Gentleman, Doug.
No.
Okay, let me find the video for it so that both you and Bulelo can roll your eyes after the break.
All right, we'll get to that. We've got lots to get into. Oh, it's such a busy Tuesday today. All right, and just quickly on my one thing for the day, Carl says, I'm crazy. This is South Africa. I'm going to single-handedly increase the murder rate. I'm letting nobody in, says Carl. All right, well, you know, you don't have to do the one thing for the week every week. You can skip this one, Carl. I think there are some people who might get great pleasure out of being nice.
A cup of tea, Carl. Make a cup of tea, disposable cup.
Yeah.
Put it through the gate.
Right.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, come on. Be a good citizen.
Come on, man.
Come on, man. That's what Joe would say, Joe Biden. Come on, man. All right. When we get back, we'll get into that and a whole lot more. We got to talk about Sia's grandmother. He told me about her yesterday, and I want him to tell you the story. I saw O'Neill yesterday. We'll talk about that as well. Plenty more.
Awesome. CliffCentral.com.